The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
You've got to decide, play date or panto. You can't do both. Travel rules tightening up and the reluctance of the cabinet to subsidise antigen tests when the evidence is that they're available in some outlets, maybe for as low as €1.50. And that's a bargain. In some places, €2.59, but in many places, €6, €7, or €8. Anyway, to get more on what the Cabinet is debating, I'm joined by Fine Gael TD for Dublin Fingal, Alan Farrell. We're joined by Irish Times Consumer Affairs correspondent Conor Pope and by parenting expert Laura Erskine to shed some light on all of this. Good morning and welcome to you all. Alan, there seems to be a move by government to make recommendations and guidelines rather than rules and regulations. What's your information?
Good morning, Pat. Yes, that is my information this morning. Cabinet, as you know, are meeting at the moment and are considering the various items on their agenda for the day. That includes the likes of how to treat this particular variant and whether the likes of mandatory hotel quarantine and other restrictions are necessary. We know the Department of Foreign Affairs has already changed its status in relation to six African countries in terms of visas, and the Department of Justice are updating the visa requirements for those countries as well. But as you pointed out in your intro there, you know, I think one of your texters, you know, this is very much a slowing down of the arrival of a new variant of concern rather than being able to stop it completely. And it really is about it endeavouring to get as much information as we can on it. And Cabinet will respond in terms of what public health officials advise once that information becomes available.
The suggestion is that we would include the United Kingdom in our restrictions, that people would have to be tested. And I'm not sure how it is proposed that that works. Do they have to come in with a PCR test conducted in the UK, or do they come in and undertake to take a PCR test, which would then have to be shown to the HSE within 2 days? What is the idea? Because, you know, given you've got a border and people can come through Liverpool to Belfast and then down without any restriction on the border, I'm just wondering where the science is in all of this.
Well, any person travelling to Ireland using the UK as either a starting point or indeed as an interim point is subject to the common travel area. So there isn't any restriction in that sense.
At the moment,
nor has there been.
There has been talk overnight about introducing PCR testing. Yeah. So how does that square with the border?
I'm not aware of. I've heard the talk as well, but I'm not aware of anything formal in terms of any decisions being made as to how to approach that matter. What I can say is that the British Embassy, for instance, put out some remarks on social media yesterday, I believe it was, and they reiterated that it doesn't apply in Ireland. So it's difficult to square talk versus fact at the moment, but we will, I'm sure, get further detail on that later today.
Yeah. Now, obviously, travel from Southern Africa, I think everybody is saying it can only slow down the arrival, but Omicron will inevitably arrive here. In the meantime, we're coping with an ongoing surge in Delta with, you know, close to 5,000 cases yesterday. So it may have plateaued, but it's plateaued at a level that is pretty unacceptable. They're doing all sorts of things in the Netherlands, and I could go through all the countries in Europe where they're taking measures, much more significant measures than we are. You know, you can still go to a football match. We saw close to 40,000 people in the Aviva for the FAI Cup final. Many of them were wearing masks. Were they obliged to wear masks?
Yeah, that is something that I think will have to be considered in terms of the treatment of COVID on an ongoing basis. And I don't just mean in the month of November or December, I mean on an ongoing basis. It's very clear that COVID, when we least expect it and want it, it changes. And in that sense, we have this new variant of concern, but without information on it, it's difficult to make decisions. But going back to the fact that we have a new plateau, You know, we have had huge success in this country over the past 20 months, nearly 22 months now indeed, in terms of how we as a state, how we as a public health service, how we as citizens have dealt with COVID. And I think we know how to deal with it. We know what risks can and should or should not be taken. And in terms of outdoor...
Do you mean the learnings of last Christmas, for example, when you were warned about everything by NEVID? Don't open up everything. You can do one thing or the other, schools or hospitality. You did both. And we paid the price. And people paid the price last January with their lives.
We had seven months of extreme difficulty in 2021, and I don't think anybody, frankly, needs to be reminded of what the problems that presented right across society, whether that's education, whether that's the health services, or indeed the general mood of the nation. I think what we need to make careful decisions in terms of how we approach, in particular, children. And I speak not just as a TD, but as a father of two children as well, two primary school children. And you know, making those decisions, I think, is down to the good judgment of parents. And at the start, you asked me about whether these decisions were going to be mandatory or advisory, and at the moment I understand they're going to be advisory, because over the past 20 to 22 months parents have made really, really good decisions, and we want to encourage that. And on an ongoing basis, if you're outdoors, if you're in a large setting, even outdoors, but if there's very little social distancing, well, then the public health advice has always been to wear a mask if deemed appropriate. And that goes for stadia as well.
I can't let you away with statements like that. The public health advice has been always to wear a mask. At the beginning of this pandemic, we were told by the CMO that we shouldn't be wearing masks because people would not wear them properly, and that they were useless. Then, of course, the science had to trump what they were saying, and they had to reluctantly change their tune, as they changed their tune reluctantly again about quarantining in hotels, as they changed their tune about antigen testing, again very reluctantly. So don't give me this stuff about doing it impeccably. We have not.
No, Pat, I meant in general, as in we as a nation have dealt with COVID very, very well, and the statistics are borne out in international comparisons. But what if you want to talk about that in the past, I'm not a scientist, but what I will say is that there's no playbook on COVID, and there remains no playbook on COVID. We now know, or on pandemics, we now know what to do and what's appropriate. And I think the medical advice has evolved with what we have learned over the last 22 months. So I'm not saying we got it perfect, but I am saying we've dealt with it very well, and that goes including NEFIT.
Okay.
So the advice
but
is
anyway,
there.
In a crowded setting, Pat,
the advice was always there. You know, if you're outside and you cannot socially distance, you should wear a mask. That was the advice, insofar as I can recall, for the last 18 months at least.
Well, I could demur, but I'm not going to waste time. The main thing that we get from you, Alan, is that you agree with the notion that there should not be regulation, if you like. Everything that the government is saying is going to be a guideline. So therefore, in a school, for example, you've got a guideline that kids over 9 or over in third class and beyond will wear masks. But it's only a guideline that if they're out and about in a crowded setting and they're over 9, they wear a mask. It's only a guideline. Right. Even though all over the world, they're saying that all kids in school, from, you know, babies up, should be wearing a mask. But for some reason, we don't believe...
I can't be definitive, Pat, on whether it will be a guideline at this point. The Cabinet will make their decision on that, and they will announce that later this morning. But what I can say is that, you know, we have professional teachers making professional decisions in the classrooms in terms of what can and cannot be enforced, and what can and should be enforced. I mean, children particularly with additional needs who simply can't wear a mask, obviously the rules are going to be changed to suit that particular child. But parents will use their good judgment as to whether they believe their child can or indeed should wear a mask if it is an advisory. And I believe lots of children will be mature enough to make that decision for themselves with the support of their parents and their teacher. And we're just asking for people to use their best judgment in the circumstances in which they find themselves. Okay. And if that includes a 9 or 10 or an 11-year-old wearing a mask, well, then so be it.
Yeah, don't forget, Alan, the mantra is my mask protects you, your mask protects me. So my child is wearing a mask which protects the child who's not wearing a mask. So perhaps we need a little more leadership in all of this. But anyway, we leave it there. Alan Farrell, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Fingal. Thank you very much. Laura Erskine, a parenting expert. Laura, you also believe in the autonomy, if you like, of the parent.
Absolutely. I think parents need to exercise judgment based on their own set of circumstances and knowing their children best as to what will help them through these difficult weeks as we try and mitigate the spread of the Delta variant amongst our unvaccinated primary school children. Not all children do sports and so structured hobbies and play dates and events like going to the cinema or an annual tradition like visiting the Panto will be really important for them. So stopping all social activities and play dates or stopping all extracurricular activities like sports isn't the answer. Children need these outlets for their mental health. And, you know, depending on the child, he or she will engage in football or maybe has music lessons. And so deciding that only outdoor activities can go ahead or only structured extracurricular activities can go ahead will not suit all children for whom things like play dates or other social activities are also an important mental health outlet. And choosing one of those a week is perfectly reasonable.
Perfectly reasonable as long as everybody kind of obeys the rules. Isn't that the case, Laura? I mean, if you're playing the violin, you can possibly play the violin along with six or seven others in a small room wearing a mask. But you can't play the recorder or any other wind instrument wearing a mask. You're going to be puffing and huffing and blowing out whatever bugs might be in your system. So you do depend on all the parents and the teacher in charge of these classes all doing the right thing, don't you?
You do. And I think we're at this long enough now, nearly 2 years on, that we know what is appropriate for our child. We know not to send our child with a runny nose or a cough to a music wind, lesson. It's something where we're exercising our good judgment. And it's something that the government needs to trust that most parents will make the right decision when it comes to their child and based on their child's health on a particular day. I guess what they're really trying to do is to limit children's social activities that happen outside of their classroom pod. And so we've got so many children sitting in pods of between 4 and 6 children in a classroom environment where it's somewhat controlled as to who they're mixing with. And I guess what we're trying to do now in terms of limiting the spread of the Delta variant is to really understand how many social interactions they're having outside of those pods. And if we were to limit that to one a week, then I suppose we are going to help with that spread of the variant.
The more activities you do, the greater the risk. It's just a pure statistic. It doesn't mean that you'll catch anything, because if you're not mixing with people who are infected, you're not going to catch anything anyway. But if you do a lot of things, well, your chances of bumping into someone who's infected and will infect you are greater. So you mentioned the Panto, and I'm a great fan of Pantos. Love them ever since childhood and generally tried to go. But looking at the typical audience in a Panto, you've got very young kids who cannot be vaccinated. You've got grandparents who hopefully are boosted at this point or on the way to being boosted. But you've got maybe, in a big Panto, 1,200 people all laughing happily and singing along and doing all the rest of the things. I mean, there is the opportunity for infection.
There absolutely is. And I think in those circumstances where we are having large groups of people congregating together in an indoor setting, particularly where you've got mixing of vulnerable members of society who may be vaccinated and maybe even had their booster with grandparents, but also with much younger members of society who haven't yet been allowed to get a vaccination, I think that the rules need to change a little in that regard. And I think that mask wearing should be obligatory for children over the age of 5. 5 at that point, as it is in our European other countries. Yeah. I'm just back from Italy not too long ago, and all of the school children there are wearing their masks. My own children, once they heard the guidance from the government to wear the masks to school, they're age 10 and 12, and they're seeing their peers wear it. And there was a scramble this morning to find, you know, a tie-dye mask that we wanted to wear as a fashion statement to go in. Yeah. Children tend to follow their peers, and if they see everyone else is wearing it, they will too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Laura, for joining me, because we point out the anomaly that those over 5 in schools cannot yet be vaccinated. They don't wear masks, and those over 12 do wear masks, and yet all of them can be vaccinated. It's again, it defies science, but there you go. That's what we try to bring our listeners on this program, is the direction of science. Connor Pope, Irish Times consumer affairs correspondent, listening to all of this. I hope you're not too boggled by it all, Connor.
Do you know what I was thinking, Pat, when I was listening to the text messages that you were getting in, and indeed to Alan Farrell and Laura and yourself? There's just so many imponderables and so much uncertainty out there. And that's causing frustration to mount, and indeed anger to mount across the board. And people are getting very, very upset. And you see that particularly in the last few days when, you know, we all thought, OK, we've reached a plateau. The Delta variant, we're steadying the number of cases, and then suddenly we have a new variant coming down the tracks that has turned everything on its head again, and it's plunged the entire world into more uncertainty. Yeah. And it's just it's a very, very difficult time, because, you know, we have a question and answer thing on our website today about travel and where international travel is going to go. And first thing this morning, I got a mail from somebody working in the travel industry saying they were very upset by the Q&A because it didn't answer all the questions. And I have huge sympathy for that person, because, you know, but because the Q&A doesn't answer all the questions, because we simply don't know the answer to the questions.
Yeah. I mean, we're hoping that the cabinet today, you have a question in your on your website. Will I need a PCR test if I plan to leave Ireland? The answer that you give, this seems increasingly likely. But it's not definitive yet. We are still awaiting the news. In terms of, exactly, say, Portugal, for example, where I was last week, I didn't need to have a test because I had my COVID cert to get into Portugal when I arrived. But from this week, you do need, on top of your COVID cert, you need a test, a negative test. So it's a moving picture all the time. And we're about to move the dial ourselves in this country after the cabinet meeting.
And that's where the frustration is. I mean, yesterday when I was writing that Q&A, it was all about PCR tests. Now it's emerged that perhaps it's antigen testing will be sufficient. But like you, actually, funnily enough, I was in Portugal a couple of weeks ago, and I relied, and my wife relied, on our digital COVID cert. And we all thought that when the digital COVID cert was introduced on July the 19th, that that was going to be the answer to international travel across Europe. And then when it... when the United States opened its borders, we thought, well, at least now the world is slowly opening up and we're getting back to normal. But as I say, this week, everything is different. And I've been speaking to people in the travel industry, and they're just so on edge. And that's the only way to put it. They're just like, their nerves are frayed because they don't know what's going to happen next. They don't know what's going to emerge from the cabinet meeting. And even what emerges from the cabinet meeting won't give us any kind of consistency, and we don't know what's going to happen this time next week. And like, people are making calls to their travel agents and their tour operators. Nobody's panicking yet, and that's the one thing I would say to people: there is no need to be making big decisions on what you're going to do with your travel plans for this week, next week, the week after next. I think we really do have to draw breath and wait and see what happens next, because we just don't know.
So Connor, a couple of things. I mean, there are those who have the luxury of being able to go to the Southern Hemisphere around Christmas time when the weather's lovely in Cape Town and all that. I've never done it, but often thought what a wonderful thing it would be. But where are they now in terms of a package or a flight they might have booked to Cape Town, hoping to go there? And we're talking about flights to and from Southern Africa being banned.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose the one constant is what the Department of Foreign Affairs says. And when they issue a travel advisory warning people not to travel to a particular destination, anyone who has a holiday booked with a tour operator or with a travel agent has a right to a refund, or they can reschedule their holiday. And all of the tour operators in Ireland are just wearily familiar with that process by this stage, because they've been dealing with it for so long. So somebody who has a holiday booked for, as you say, the Southern Hemisphere, for South Africa, for Botswana, wherever it might be, you know, they will need to contact their tour operator or the travel agent today, find out if the holiday is going ahead, and if not, what their options are. But they do have options. The second thing to say is that people who've booked DIY holidays to that part of the world, if they have travel insurance, typically nowadays in the 20 months since the pandemic, it will cover COVID cancellations if there's a Department of Foreign Affairs, a travel advisory against going to a particular destination. And then the third cohort will be people who've booked holidays independently, but maybe don't have travel insurance. And then what they're kind of at the mercy of the airlines, they're at the mercy of the travel tour operators, the hotels or whatever it might be. But what's really important is that you talk to the airlines, you talk to the hotels, you talk to the car hire companies, and you try and come to an arrangement that will allow you either holiday in the weeks ahead or get your money back. But it's just the reality is it is just so uncertain. And we're talking about seven countries in Africa today. It could be 20 countries tomorrow. And I'm not saying that to scare people, because we just don't know. And then, of course, there's a question about the PCR, the testing regime. And I was speaking to travel agents and tour operators yesterday, and like, people are going to have to make really hard decisions about whether or not if they're going away to London for a weekend, do they want to travel to London and you don't need a PCR test going to London because they've said that we're part of the common travel area. But if you do need a negative test coming back, you know, people will have to make a decision whether or not they want to go through all the hoops, go through all the hassle, and indeed pay the price of those antigen tests or PCR tests before they come home. So there's just so much uncertainty out there.
Yeah. And the final thing, Conor, I suppose, is the reason countries like Portugal changing the rules about testing is because of the age of the test. I mean, you get waning efficacy of the vaccines after 4, 5, 6 months, depending on which vaccine you got. So therefore, your COVID cert should really have a best before date. And then they've got to start giving you a new one for the booster shot.
Exactly.
You know, now, because your COVID cert is dated as to your second vaccination. So they'll need to do something to update that to show you've had a booster.
And I think they will do that. But you must remember that when the COVID cert was rolled out during the summer, we all hoped that the vaccines would give us a more prolonged immunity than it looks like it's giving us. So I think what's inevitable is that the digital COVID cert will reflect whether or not somebody has been given a booster, if they're eligible for a booster. Now, I'm not eligible for a booster just yet, but when I am, I'll be first in line to get it. My wife isn't eligible for a booster, but I think what they're going to do is they will introduce a tweak to the COVID cert that if you are eligible for a booster, then you need to get the booster, and that will be reflected on the COVID cert, which, by the way, is pretty seamless. And it has, you know, we criticise the health authorities, we criticise our governments, and not just in Ireland, across. But the COVID cert has worked. It has worked in restaurants. It has worked with international travel. But it does probably need to be updated, as you say, because it probably now has a best before date.
Yeah. And they know how to do it. So they just send you another email with your booster details on it, and you do the QR code and then load it up onto your COVID app, and off you go. Conor, thank you very much for joining us. That's the Irish Times consumer affairs correspondent, Conor Pope.